This is the closing market report for a Friday afternoon. On the phone line with us to take a look at the numbers in Chicago as they settled up on a Friday afternoon, Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He is in Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, let's see. What can we talk about this week? Usually we talk at this time of year about the corn crop getting better. This year, at least, we do. And it seems like it continues to get better. The weather seems not to be too bad. And there are some areas that are drying out. The marketplace has been going lower. What can you tell me about it?
I think the biggest thing to talk about probably is that even though the weather did turn a little bit more price negative at midday on the updated models, Todd, the wheat short covering did accelerate, compensated for it, and helped to keep the grains positive on the close. One of the first weeks we've seen where the wheat's been able to do any good for the row crops. And I think, you know, weather certainly, as I told clients last week and I started talking about corn basis and how to lock in basis first in corn before the futures market or right around when the futures market bottoms, the three things to look at is WW1, wheat, weather, and inflation. And we had two of those three this week come into play, weather and the wheat. And, you know, just some numbers to give you an idea of where we're at right now and how bad this bleeding has been in the wheat market, which has led the corn lower. This is only the third day that we've been able to close above the 10-day moving average in September wheat since May 8th. This is the second consecutive weekly close higher in wheat on a weekly chart that we haven't seen that since April. So we're talking about doing something that hasn't been done for 3 to 5 months when it comes right down to it. So there are some glimmers of hope when it comes to the demand side. Weekly export sales, very, very strong. Weather is going maybe from perfect to near perfect to by the end of the week, a little bit concerning west of the Mississippi. Just looked up the European 10-day precip totals. Omaha is looking at 0.3 inches of rain the next 10 days after this current system goes through. Indianapolis is looking at 2.5 inches. So you can kind of start to see a split in the Corn Belt as far as precipitation. And so I think these are the things that are starting to mature. I think corn would have done a lot better and not been down 8 cents in September and almost 7 cents in December on the week, and followed wheat a little bit better had it not been for the DDG issue coming out of China just yesterday.
Let's talk about that more in a moment, but stay with wheat for me at this time. Do you suppose, and I know it'll take a while to confirm this, but that we might be putting a harvest low in the wheat market?
I think that's highly likely because this was the first week that we were able to see fundamentals and technicals come together. We started to see news out of Europe that quality wheat was having difficulty being found finally. It's been a rapid pace of export, Todd, around the world. We just haven't gotten any. You and I have talked about that. I think probably the biggest sleeper factors that are starting to come into the market and will become big issues in the next 10 to 15 days that will determine probably the upside potential in wheat is the Indian monsoon. We've hit July 24th. That's their kind of drop-dead date for getting crops in the ground and having them have a very good likelihood of making max yield. We're about 16% in terms of planted area behind in rice, 32% behind in corn, 17% behind in oil seeds. Specifically, soybean planting is about 14% behind in area compared with last year as of July 24th. The second thing is Australia. That's getting a little bit more press, a little bit drier in some key wheat-growing areas there. So what has been very bearish for the trade in the northern hemisphere, El Nino, is starting to pick up a little bit more positive sentiment in some of those key southern hemisphere areas because of the same effect of El Nino.
Why is it, do you suppose, and you mentioned this, that China has gone to the United States Department of Agriculture and said, can you please give us a GMO certification on the DDG? We don't want, and they don't want a couple of Syngenta GMOs. I think it's Duracate and Viptura. But they have taken a lot of DDGs over the past year, of course, and there'd be some there, too.
They have an oversupply of hogs. I mean, I think that's the simple answer. They have an oversupply of hogs. They've been exporting meal to our normal Asian customers, still taking our DDGs. That's not working. Their corn prices made yet another new record high this week, is my understanding off of one of the websites I follow. I haven't been able to confirm that, though, but that's what I'm seeing right now. I think the simple answer is they have over-accelerated their production of hogs. Their consumption has also fallen because of these meat food scandals, and we've got a brand new one that went from China to Japan to Hong Kong when it came to the Yum Brands and the McDonald's flare-up here this week. That's still ongoing. I think that's the simple answer, Todd, is they're trying to get and unload some of their feed grain and slow down their imports because they got to get a handle on their hog prices. Now, hog oversupply. Yeah.
Does that mean they're trying to control the supply of the input? So they've got a very high price for corn. They're trying to control the inputs of or the DDGs and constrain feed so that folks would stop continuing to push hogs through the marketplace?
I think that's exactly right, and I think that goes back to they have gone through this boom-bust cycle, and this is very well known and very well documented, even in this country in the 70s and 80s, the boom-bust cycle of livestock, and they're still working out some of the issues that we had to deal with 20 to 30 years ago, and I recognize I'm oversimplifying it, but for time constraints, I think that's probably your biggest issue right now is they do not want high food inflation because they want to continue to expand their economy to meet that 7.5% GDP goal. Right now, they don't have a fear of that because hog prices and pork prices have been dropping. In fact, the June CPI came out this past week. One of the biggest reasons why it was flatter than the trade was expecting was because pork was lower. Poultry was higher. Pork was lower. Pork can sometimes make up 25 to 30% of the overall CPI. For the food especially, and even the overall CPI, it can really affect dramatically. So they don't have to worry as much about food inflation, so they're able to try and tweak their hog industry at this point. And unfortunately for us, I'm guessing there's some politics behind this and some trade issues behind this. It's coming back in the form of agriculture as maybe a little bit of a trade weapon as well.
And one final question. You mentioned basis, and you were talking to your clientele about using that at this point. Let me see if I've got this right. So you're saying that because the futures markets have been moving lower, the basis has been following it, so it might be a little narrower at this point or closer to the same price, not the same price, but closer to the same price than it might be if we bottom the futures markets and begin to move upward and basis would deteriorate or widen as we get closer to harvest. So you want them to be able to lock in that basis today and then something else later. Is that what
I'm following? Yeah, as soon as we get that, exactly right. As soon as we get the commodity index charts to show a bull buy signal on the technicals, that's where we want to lock in the basis with the idea that, as you say, if the futures start to rally, the end users and the commercials will compensate for that by widening the basis. I think that's going to be fairly easy to do this year because of the rail car tightness and what we talked about on Commodity Week either last week or a couple weeks ago with Brian Basting. There are some issues out there that we have to be aware of early on that there's going to be some logistical problems potentially down the line that will make our basis wider than what we're expecting. So be on guard for that. I think the key, though, when you do this type of strategy, Todd, is that you have to give yourself a date that you want to have that futures locked in. And so I've been talking to clients about that as well. What date do we not want to leave the basis or have the basis locked in and not leave the futures open? There's a drop-dead date. We need to get that futures locked in. So, by the way, there was a big cattle on feed report, and the biannual numbers came out pretty much on track with what the trade was thinking. The monthly cattle on feed report, the placements were a little bit lower because ranchers did hold back a little bit more on better pasture. So June placements were only 94%. The trade expectations on the news wires was just under 97%.
Ooh, that and the DDG thing combined could be a problem up front.
Well, it could be, and this is where it goes back to the wheat market. You know, corn needs a friend. We all know that. It either needs the weather friend out of the soybeans, or it needs a wheat friend out of a technical bottom.
All right. Hey, thanks so much.
Thank you, sir.
That is Mike Zuzulo. He's with Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting in Atchison, Kansas.